We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh, no. With MyBookie and its cash-out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag. Every day, companies you've probably never heard of are making billions off your personal data. Name, address, phone number, even details about your family. All being pulled from public records and the internet, and then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace making money off your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Plus, they alert you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal tool. It's a full digital security suite. VPN, antivirus, password manager, spam call protection, and dark web monitoring for your social security number, bank logins, and passwords. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other services charge the same, but only cover one or maybe two areas. With Aura, you get all of it in one simple app. Right now, you can try Aura for free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That's enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. Check website for more details.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas has styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Are you familiar with my product?
I've been told it's excellent.
It is impeccable. It is the purest, most chemically sound product on the market anywhere. You could charge twice the current rate for what I provide, and your customers would pay it. Hands down. Now, who I choose to do business with on my end is not your problem.
Rodgers can't believe what he has just witnessed. It might be the end for him. But they went around the country and spoke to a lot of the kickers who were coming out. And they decided Tyler Loop was made of the right stuff for moments like this. He now has a chance to win the division for the Ravens. The final play of the regular season for the final spot in the playoffs. Tyler Loop from 44. Holman, the kick is no good! It is wide right! And the Steelers are the champions of the North!
This is the Zabe Cast. From the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go! And with that, the regular season has come to an end in the National Football League. Oh my God. You would say it was so good, so dramatic, that it had to be scripted and that the league might have put gyro-controlled footballs in for the kickers at the end of the game. But then that would make you sound like a lunatic. And who would want to sound like a lunatic. Are you not entertained? As the great Maximus Decimus Meridius once said, yes, we are entertained, and the dance card is full for playoff-uary. Welcome aboard, everybody. How you doing? And welcome to the Zabecast as I sit in the wee hours of Monday, January 5th. You are all nestled, tucked in your beds, awaiting spreadsheets and Zoom calls tomorrow morning, in just hours from now, as a matter of fact, as everyone gets back to work on a Monday. Hell, you might have a real job that is a actual job, like, you know, digging ditches or standing on a slick, icy roof, nailing down shingles. And for you, the hardworking people, America, I salute you. For you soft-ass office workers, you sit-downers, don't bitch. You had plenty of time off for the holidays. So I wanted to get some NFL in before we get to my conversation with Andy Pollin, which I did earlier in the day with his son Jeremy, who went to the Rose Bowl to see Indiana beat the living breaks off of Alabama. A lot of college football to talk about with Andy, plus some media stories and more. We'll get to him in just a second. But first, let's start with that game on Sunday night. Are you kidding? Hell of a game. It was a real mud wrestling fight for a long time, and then it got very interesting at the end. I mean, Zay Flowers, it's like, where you been all year? And made big play after big play, but mostly because Jalen Ramsey is a dummy. Not only did Jalen Ramsey get completely confused on, I think, the second of the two Zay Flowers touchdowns, but then he could have gone up and broken the ball up from Isaiah Likely, but then he tried to catch it for some reason. Punch it out. I'm watching it going, okay, this is not quality football right here. And then, of course, you had Awuzie slip on the Austin touchdown that put the Steelers ahead, seemingly in really strong position until Chris Boswell hit an absolute banana ball. I mean, oh my God. And Boswell doesn't miss. Boswell is the kicker that Mike Tomlin says, our kicker is a serial killer. His blood runs cold. Well, he was looking like he was going to be the most sick man on earth for many days until Tyler Loop said, oh, don't worry, hold my beer. And poor Tyler Loop missed it the way inexperienced kickers miss big kicks, a push, a fear of a full leg release, of a full whomp to put it through, the kind of, I want to guide it through. As a golfer, I know the feeling. That's the kind of putt you hit when you're nervous. A little push, yip, right there. You know, the massage guy, he would have made that kick. What, too soon? He wasn't arrested. There's no charges. All right. I have it on pretty good informational authority that, yes, everything that Justin Tucker was accused of by all the massage therapists and parlors in and around Baltimore were true. So he made his bed. He can lie in it. Or he made his massage table. He can lie on it. Poor Tyler Loop, though. I mean, just the life of a kicker. Just, you know, break out the Adam Sandler lonesome kicker, Andre Kristakovich-Lalinski. Andre Kristakovich-Lalinski, the lonesome kicker. That's going to be Tyler Loop. As the Ravens are out and the Steelers are in. And yes, give it up for one Aaron Rodgers.
Where is Aaron right now?
Aaron is in the playoffs, out of his darkness yurt and into the playoffs. He was great. Make no mistake. It was a lot of dinks, a lot of dunks, a lot of quick slants. He missed some throws, but he hit the ones that totally mattered in the end. And you got to give it up for him in that regard. And so he'll be in the playoffs along with the Steelers. And I've got the playoff television schedule here, plus the seeding, plus the odds, plus the point spreads. And we'll get to that in just a second. But I want to give Rodgers credit. Let me get the final numbers on Rodgers for the game. Where was my box score? I only have 26 tabs open. Rodgers, 31 of 47, 294. and a 90.2 rating. One touchdown, no INTs. Jalen Warren, 14 carries, 66 yards, averaged 4.7 per. And Rodgers had one carry for 20 yards. A unbelievable tiptoe job into the open field. Several other scrambles, he was like... And that's what being 42 will do. Gainwell continues to be Mr. Gadget, Mr. Everything. 8 catches, 64 yards. Also had some productive carries along the way as well. But Rodgers gets it done with a bunch of cast-offs he was thrown to. Gainwell, Austin, Thielen, MVS. And now you get DK Metcalf back for the playoffs as the Pittsburgh Steelers are in. And they will host the Houston Texans. And let's give it up to the Texans, everybody, who have escaped their 8-year purgatory on Saturday afternoon of Wild Card Weekend. That's right. Always in the early game on Saturday for the Texans. Not this year. They'll be the Monday night game on ESPN. Texans at Steelers. Check your local listings. Let me get the point spreads here. Let's just go down the playoff games right now. Okay, here we go. Here is your postseason schedule starting on Saturday, 4:30 in the afternoon, Rams-Panthers, one of the largest lines for a playoff road team in the last 20 years. The Rams are minus 10 or minus 10.5 against the Panthers, who get in on Sunday thanks to the Atlanta Falcons. And no thanks from Arthur Blank, who promptly fired both Radio Raheem and Terry Fontenot. I know, it's Terry Fontenot, the GM of the team. People were digging up the clips from draft day 2 years ago when they surprise took Michael Penix Jr. high in the first round, even though they just bought Kirk Cousins as a free agent for a whole lot of money. And there's Arthur Blank with his snidely whiplash mustache and his red coat and his hunched back, talking really intense to Fontenot, trying to understand, like, what are we doing here exactly? And I'm not declaring Penix a bust. He's got his ACL repaired again, third time, I believe. He might have just been saying, well, what are we doing here? Like, we got a guy. We're going to not ride the guy Kirk for a couple of years. And I'm not saying Kirk would have been better all year long. Kirk is competent. Kirk is what he is. He's not going to be a game changer. So that was a surprise. I don't think I saw any pundit saying that Raheem Morris was in trouble. Maybe a few people saying, nah, possibly, but, and especially not after they won their final, however many games they won, their late surge to tie up the NFC South, the dirty, dirty South. So a double firing before Black Monday even, you know, rose out of the dawn. Pow-pow! Sorry, boys. Kurt Benkert, who I guess was once under Fontenot. Fontenot called him to say, hey, I'm the new GM. And, it was in Atlanta, as a matter of fact. He said, yeah, hey, Kurt, Terry, the new GM, just wanted to call and introduce myself. And Benkert, being ever the rah-rah guy, said, all right, great to meet you, Mr. Fontenot. Looking forward to getting after it. And Fontenot said, yeah, that's not this type of call. You're cut. Benkert said, I hope that Arthur Blank was just as curt and ruthless with him as he was with me. Ah, yes. A pro athlete being cut. Even the ones that are lowly ones that know that they're probably on the fringes of being NFL players. It hurts. It stings. I get it. I would say the Packers' Clayton Tune, who was rolled out against the Vikings. Oh, he's so not an NFL player. God, was he awful. The Packers just shit their pants. But it doesn't matter. Does it or will it? We'll see. We'll see as we get set for the games this coming weekend. So first game, Rams at Panthers. That one is at 4:30 on Fox. Panthers are 10 and 10.5 point underdogs, calling for cloudy weather, 59 degrees in Charlotte, North Carolina. Then the Packers and Bears Saturday night on Prime Video. That's right, Amazon Prime. L. Michaels. Luckily, I know exactly how to sync up the best play-by-play man in the NFL, the great Wayne Larrivee, with the Green Bay Packers and Larry McCarron, The Rock, So I will be listening to them and not listening to Al Michaels and Kirk fucking Herbstreit. Bears are 1.5-point home dogs. Wow. And the Bears shit the bed with a chance. Well, they're still the 2 seed, but that's only because the Eagles threw away the 2 seed, which we'll get to in a second. So there's your Saturday games. Packers, Bears at night. The early game is the Rams and the Panthers. Sunday, 1 o'clock, triple header. Bills, Jaguars, your first game. Buffalo -1.5. That is on CBS. Fox has Niners, Eagles from the link. Philly -3.5. And then Chargers, Patriots from Foxborough Sunday night on Peacock. New England -3.5. Your Monday game is the Texans at the Steelers. Houston is a 3-point road favorite as I sit here nearly at 1 a.m. on a Monday morning. So let's go through some of the notes from the final week of the NFL and some of the scores and the outcomes and thoughts about it all. First of all, Myles Garrett got his sack. Was it a bit shady? Oh, yes, it was. Joe Burrow went down in a way that looked like, wait a minute. He could have fought more. He could have ran with a bit more urgency. It wasn't as bad as the Strahan, the Favre laydown for Strahan, but it was still a little bit dicey. Here's the thing. Garrett is a phenomenal player. He's one of one, and he's been a wrecking ball all year long on an otherwise bad Browns team who won the game on a last-second Schmizik field goal. Kid was the GOAT to start the year. He was the hero of this game. Myles Garrett is great. He had a lot of sacks this year. He could have had even more. Guess what? The record is the phoniest non-record going because they didn't start keeping track of sacks until 1982, I want to say. Amazing to think that one of the most valued things in football, a sack, the other team's quarterback must go down, he must go down hard. That's what Al Davis said. It literally ends drives. Most drives with a sack end in a punt. Statistically proven. It's science. And they didn't start keeping it until 82 as an official stat. That's crazy. And the number of games have expanded since that time. So, yeah, we've gone from 14 to 16 to 18. So, you know, how many games did you get your number of sacks? It's whatever. They stopped the game for 5 minutes, and the Bengals coach did not like that one bit whatsoever. But so be it. It was at their stadium, and they should have had better control of the game ops. They should have yelled at the referees to go, hey, yeah, he got the record against us. We're not happy about it, but guess what? Get him off the fucking field, and let's keep playing football. Anyway, there was that. The Lions and the Vikings both finished 9-8. The Vikings by beating the Packers and Clayton Toon in an ugly game in which J.J. McCarthy left the game with a hand injury. And they finished with Max Brosmer. And the Lions won the game by coming, well, they were ahead 16-0, then threw the lead away, then came back, made a big stop late, and got a field goal late to win the game to possibly make it an interesting situation. I'm watching both the games, the Commanders, Eagles, and the Bears. And the Lions, and you know the Packers, you definitely want to avoid Philly. Philly owns Green Bay. They've won 4 in a row. They're a bully team. They were resting their starters. They got a lot of playoff experience. They can run the ball. And so they avoided that. They get to go to Chicago for a third matchup this year, which we'll see how it comes out. But it's going to be fun. Saturday night on Prime Video. So the Vikings, the Lions, and the Packers all finished with 9 wins. The Packers, though, finished with 1 tie. And as much as everyone hates ties, remember a tie is half a win. That tie came in handy. It is the first time an entire division has finished above 500 since 1935, according to the statisticians. I would love to see what divisions existed in the NFL in 1935 and the names of the teams that were in them back then. We're talking World War II era football. There was that. Why did the Eagles give away the 2 seed? This is something that many Eagle fans are screaming about regarding Sirianni. You know, if you win and the Lions do what they did, which is upset the Bears, you're the 2 seed, which means if you win your first game, you get another home game guaranteed, no matter who gets fed to you in the reseeding. Why would you not fight for that? And the Eagles did not. They set Hurts, Barkley, and Brown, and they seemed to not give a shit against the Commanders and Josh Johnson. The Jets finished the year with another resounding dud of a loss. I believe they finished their last 5 games getting outscored 188-33. And they did not record an interception all season long. That has also never been done in the history of the NFL. And according to reports, Aaron Glenn is safe, believe it or not. Safe. Woody Johnson's not going to fire him after this year. It's not just that they were god-awful. It's not just that they were non-competitive at times, much of the year. I think I saw a stat that said the Jets trailed by double digits 53.2% of their total time of the season, and it is the highest this century, so going back to 2000. And Aaron Glenn's going to stick around. I have a theory on this, and that is the Jets are so afraid of their own ineptitude, they think to themselves, all right, shit, we hired a dud. He needs to be one and done. But we can't, we suck at this. We're going to hire another dummy. We can't do anything right. And so it's like the Jets have just said, yeah, screw it. Keep the guy we got. Maybe next year we'll be better. I doubt it. To be a Jet fan at this point in life, to be a Jet fan at any time in life, post Joe Namath, is an exercise in extreme masochism if you choose it, and child cruelty if you train your kids and raise them to be Jet fans. Through the games, here we go. Saints and Falcons. Falcons beat the Saints 19-17. Not enough, though, to keep Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot both fired before the Falcons even landed, I believe, or as soon as they did back in Georgia. Baker Mayfield was seen on social media watching the game, agonizingly pulling for the Saints, who made a rally late but couldn't close the deal. Saints finished 6-11. The Falcons finished 8-9. Both those teams had a chance, had they not thrown some earlier games away, to be in a multiple-way tie for that division championship. The Browns and the Bengals. I mentioned the sack, obviously, for Myles Garrett. The Browns win at 20-18. Shedeur Sanders, a 12.8 QBR in this game, according to ESPN, because they're the ones that own the proprietary stat that includes some non-statistical evaluation of quarterbacks. That's awful. The 12.8 is awful. His season average, Shedeur's, for the games he started was 18.8. It's the lowest in Cleveland Browns history. Stefanski is likely to get fired. Shedeur has enough athletic tools and assets to want to keep going with him next year. I assume he'll be QB1 going into camp, but anything is possible at this point. The Cowboys lose to the Giants 34-17. The Giants could have stolen the first pick in the draft because the Raiders actually won their game, but of course they didn't. The Giants win, and the Cowboys gave up 34 points. The Cowboys have allowed, for the first time in their franchise history, an average of 30 points per game. Jerry, you got a lot of work to do. They played better on defense for a spell there after they made those trades, but otherwise, not so good. The Jaguars demolished the Titans. 41-7, your final. In this game, Cam Little, their kicker, made his second 65-plus yard field goal, even made a 70-yarder in preseason. And apparently Cam Little was not on the first or second Pro Bowl team, which is kind of nuts to me. Further evidence of your small market bias. Duval! After the game, Trevor Lawrence was gifted a set of grills for his teeth, you know, diamond studded fake teeth, and he put them on because there was a meme going around. He is such a square. He is such a humble, you know, God-fearing, Bible-toting, straight-laced guy, but his teammates love him, and so he was gifted those grills. I wonder if they're real diamonds. And did they get a mold of his teeth? Like, if you're going to wear those, you got to get a dentist to make a mold of your teeth, right? Anyway, the Jaguars are going to be a lot of people's sexy picks in the playoffs. I don't know, though, if this incredible turnaround under Liam Cohen to a 13-4 season, a magical season for the Jaguars, can go any further in the playoffs, but we shall see. Colts lose to the Texans. Entertaining game, 38-30, your final score there. Riley Leonard was pretty frisky in this game. Colts this year went from 8-2 to 8-3. 8-3 to 8-4, 8-3 to 8-5. You get the point. They finished 8-9. It's one of the great collapses of all time. I mentioned the Bills beating the Jets 35-8. Goodbye, Highmark Stadium. Welcome to Highmark 2, Electric Boogaloo. Bigger, nicer, with electrified roofs that melt the snow and run the rainwater off into channels. It's going to be pretty cool to see. Josh Allen did start the game and played one snap and then went out, which kept alive some streak he's got of starts, which is like 135 games or something and counting. Listen, that's a bullshit move, because we all know Brett Favre has the real games started streak for the Packers. What is it, 256, something inhuman? And there's no way that Josh Allen is going to break that. And if he does, we can remember games like this in which he played one down and then said, I'm out. The Lions beat the Bears 19-16. Talked about that. Furious rally falls short. Bears scoring two touchdowns and two-point conversions before the Lions dropped anchor, made a big stop, and kicked the game-winning field goal. The Broncos faced a Charger team that said, here, have the division. And the Broncos said, well, we're still going to make it hard on ourselves. I mean, come on. We're the Broncos this year. This is the most disrespected and suspect number one seed in a long time. The Broncos at 14-3 look very flimsy. They look very AI generated. You saw there was somebody put out the one score fliparama chart where you take every game that was a one score game for every team, flip it. Flip it the other way. Give the one score game to the other team, however you want to do it. And what is everyone's records? I believe the Broncos going into this game today would have been 3-13. Just saying. Raiders beat the Chiefs. Why? I don't know. They're still the number one pick in the draft, though. 14-12, your final out there at Allegiant. They're probably going to fire old Pete Carroll. They'll have the number one pick in the draft, probably take a quarterback, either Mendoza or Dante Moore, if those guys come out and have a new coach to try to coach them up. Raiders still going to Raider. Rams rallied to beat the Cardinals 37-20 in a game that didn't mean much to anybody. Patriots handle the Dolphins easily, 38-10. Mike McDaniel's safe, they say. We'll see after I wake up tomorrow morning if that has changed. And like I said, the Eagles lost to the Commanders 24-17. Josh Johnson, how about it? 39 years old on 14 different teams, got his only second win in the NFL in his career, and he did it by running in the game-winning touchdown to win 24-17. The Commanders screwed themselves by a couple of spots in the draft, dropping from 5-7 with the win, and I'm sure there'll be people who gripe about that. So, you got the schedule of games. I gave that to you. I got the point spreads for the games. I gave that to you. Can I just go through the odds to win it all and a few thoughts on why you would or would not bet on these teams to win it all? And then we will take a quick break, and Andy Pollin and his son Jeremy will come by to talk about the Rose Bowl experience, college football, and more. Here are your odds to win it all. Seahawks are your favorite at +430. Great defense, explosive offense, Jackson Smith and Jigba. Really good coach who has turned things around in 2 years, swapped out his quarterback, swapped out a coordinator, and they're better than ever. But is Sam Darnold still going to see ghosts? That's the big question. Rams are your second favorite at +450. You got Matt Stafford, explosive offense, McVay, Puka. The only problem is the Rams seem to be loose sometimes when it comes to closing out games. The Broncos are your third highest favorite to win at +700. Somebody has to be the favorite in the AFC. And with that number one seed, it's a short little hop. It's a bye week to get healthy, and it's a bink, bink, two home game shot at a tough place to play. where every game this year in Denver, this is a stat I also can't believe. Broncos caught another day of very warm weather up there in the Rockies, 60-plus degrees. Every home game the Broncos played this year was 60 degrees or better. Crazy. Broncos, really good D, but suspicious record, and I just don't know. Do you trust Bo Nix to make good decisions? Make good choices, Bo, for two straight games to make it to the Super Bowl, much less win it. Eagles, plus 850. I think this is overcooked. Yes, lots of experience, but low power offense, and the team, I would say, low-key hates their quarterback. Patriots, plus 1,000. Great coach, hot young quarterback. Didn't beat anybody this year. Of course, they beat everybody that was put on their schedule, so what do you want them to do? Bills are plus 1,000. You know, maybe not winning the division is the trick this time. There is no Patrick Mahomes here to hurt you. The bad man, Buffalo, and Josh Allen is no, he cannot be found to hurt you. Lamar Jackson will not be here to hurt you. This could be the Bills' year. Maybe going on the road is the trick. I doubt it, though. Texans, plus 13. Sickest defense since the 2000 Ravens. The offense, though, is prehistorically boring. I doubt it. The Jaguars at plus 1,500. They will be a lot of people's sexy long shot. It's hard to believe, though, they're ready to go deep. The Packers at plus 1,800. I wouldn't bet them to win the Super Bowl with Art Schleister's money and Pete Rose pushing from beyond the grave. They come into the playoffs ice cold, having lost four in a row. Defense has collapsed since Micah Parsons went out, plus their secondary has collapsed as well. The Bears are plus 1,900, a dud finish. Loss, loss. And Ben Johnson apparently ripped his offense for their performance against the Lions, saying it was one of the simpler game plans they've had all year, and they just didn't execute. The Ravens, well, they're out. I had them listed. The Niners are plus 2,200. You might have been saying, okay, where are the Niners, Zabe? I hear you listing them up. Where are the Niners? I had to check this twice and ask Mr. X, is this right? It's right. Niners are plus 2,200 or 22-1. And I didn't understand why it was so low until I started to think about it. So they go on the road to Philly, where they're dogs. And then if they win, they would likely have to go to Seattle. And then they would have to likely beat the Rams. I mean, that is, it's a tough road. The Chargers are plus 3,000. Also tough. Solid team. They rested Herbert. His hand's not right, but they have an uphill battle as a 7 seed as well. They have to win pretty much 3 road games to get it done. Not pretty much, but absolutely, right? Because there's no 8 seed. Yes. 7 seeds have to win 3 road games to make the Super Bowl. And the Steelers are plus 8,000. Yeah, nah. Even with DK Metcalf back. And then if you really like to throw your money away, you just want to burn some money, here you go. Panthers, plus 175. Or plus, I'm sorry, they're plus 17,500. So in other words, they're 175-1 to win the Super Bowl. Nice story. Talk about backing into the playoffs. Beep, beep, beep. That's what they did. If you want some money to burn, the Panthers will be your huckleberry. Quick break. When we come back, Andy Pollin with Jeremy talking college football, Rose Bowl, and more. You are listening to the Zabecast.
We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh, no. With MyBookie and its cash-out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag.
All the
So, as if having one Poland on a Monday was not enough, we once again go double Poland on a Monday. Andy with son Jeremy, fresh back from the granddaddy of them all. Pop that shirt, Jeremy. Show it to us. Look at that.
It might not be one of the officially licensed ones, so I don't want to get in trouble.
Andy, your boy Jeremy and his homeboys from Indiana went and had a life experience, didn't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll let him tell, but last year they went to Notre Dame, didn't go as well, right? This year, Jer, a whole lot better.
Yeah, this year was a little bit more fun. I will say the weather wasn't all that much better than it was at Notre Dame, but the outcome of the game was a whole lot better.
You guys got the best outcome for your team, just eviscerating mighty Alabama, humiliating them. But you got the worst end of the weather because the Rose Bowl is supposed to be about, Andy, the glorious low winter sun angle and the San Gabriel Mountains shining in the background, perhaps with snow on the caps with the eucalyptus trees and everything else. And they got blah. Jeremy got the Seattle weather he lives in down there.
Yeah. I will say it did stop raining right before the game, and then it had been raining from the moment we arrived, but that caused us to skip the parade and a little bit of tailgating.
So. Yeah, you guys kind of got totally gypped there. I was watching the coverage on ESPN. I'm like, holy shit, it is super raining out there, and they're squeegeeing the field and everything else, but still magnificent. So, tell us, Jeremy, how did you procure tickets? What did they cost? And who went with you to the game?
So we bought tickets, I don't know, maybe. Our plan was to buy them kind of before Alabama or before the second team qualified, because we thought maybe that would be like they wouldn't be buying yet. Maybe the market wouldn't be as bad. So we paid about $400, but believe, which wasn't bad. We expected to maybe $400
is not bad. First of all, it was four guys, you and three buddies.
So yes. And then one of my home friends just decided he wanted to come at the last second as well, but he didn't sit with us, but three college friends and myself. Yes.
And where did the three other guys originate from? Where do they live?
One lives in New York, one lives in Nashville, and one lives in Houston. So
New York, Nashville, Houston, Seattle, converging on Pasadena, California. Beautiful. $400 tickets. You bought them through a legitimate reseller?
I think through StubHub, I believe.
Okay,
yeah.
StubHub. All right, fine. And you didn't have to ask Dad for money?
No, I did not have to.
No, he's been taken care of with that, and also he's been working steadily since graduating college. So
well, he's married to a dentist, Andy. Money, baby. Okay, so you go down there, and you got a plan in place. And where are you staying in Pasadena for the game?
So we actually stayed in Glendale, which you're probably familiar with California. It's like a 10-15 minute drive from Pasadena. But there were a lot of people from the Rose Bowl staying in that area. There are some like nice restaurants and bars there. So it was pretty convenient, I would say.
Now, am I right, Andy, that you went to the Redskins' iconic first Super Bowl win ever at the Rose Bowl against the Dolphins?
Yes. My good friend Joe Fowler out there, he actually had a hotel for some reason, and we bought four tickets together, a couple other people with us, in the end zone 2 hours before kickoff at face value of $40. And had we waited...
The Super Bowl for $40 in 1983.
Right, and had we waited until like a half hour before the game, we'd have been on the 50-yard line for that, but still there were great seats. And it was a great experience. And yeah, the NFL hadn't yet realized that they could basically get whatever they wanted out of people for tickets. I mean, they stayed at a reasonable level, I would say, until like the late 90s. Like you could reasonably get Super Bowl tickets for a couple $100 until they went, wait a minute, we can put another one in front of that and people will buy them.
Yeah, well, the most amazing thing, and I don't know, Jeremy, if you've seen this, but your dad ought to point you to it. The documentary by NFL Films called The Road to Super Bowl One. At Super Bowl One, Jeremy, they were selling tickets to the game out of a hotel room with the secretary for Pete Rozelle. That's how you could get tickets. And the game was not a sellout. Yeah, it was not a sellout. And you would call up this hotel and ask for the ticket room. And they'd be like, oh, sure, we can get you three. Come on down. And you'd go up and buy tickets. So it's amazing that, and that was at the LA Coliseum, correct, Andy, the first one?
Right. Yeah, it was the Coliseum. Right.
So it's remarkable that this venue, and I'm thankful it still is in use, almost 50 years to the fact, and we've got a Poland bookend of very special moments, which is so cool. I love it. I fear the day in which they finally say, we can't keep coming back to this old bird of a stadium. Jeremy, care to tell people what the actual in-stadium experience was like at the Rose Bowl?
It's hard to get beers. Like, it's definitely old fashioned. Like, there's not a lot of bathrooms. It's not like state of the art.
Narrow corridors.
Yeah.
And no nice interior spaces, no club spaces, no jumbotrons.
But I feel like you would appreciate there's not a lot of like advertising. They haven't sold out. Yeah.
Well, they got nowhere to put it, basically. And of course, the sight lines are horrible because it's a big flat bowl that spreads out wide. And that was good enough back in the day.
It's also in the middle of nowhere. Like, that's one thing I didn't realize. Like, after the game, people were just walking for like a couple miles. I mean, it was good vibes because it was all Indiana fans, but Ubers were going to be impossible to get, and there's not really any bars or anything around there. So people would just walk to downtown Pasadena. It probably took like an hour. If I was on the losing side of that walk probably would hurt a little bit more. But
the walk of shame would have sucked. Instead, it was a good vibe stroll through rainy Southern California. Andy, what do you remember about the Rose Bowl when you were there?
Just the bench seats, the fact that we drove in. Did you drive to the game, Jared?
So we took an Uber, but it just became so ridiculous. Like, there's only a couple ways to get there. So about a half mile out, we just started walking. I think that's what most people did.
We drove in, and I remember it was a dirt road. I mean, it was crazy. Yeah. And people were, leaning out of their cars and yelling, and I felt like there were more Dolphin fans there than Redskin fans, but from what I was seeing on social media, and Jeremy confirmed this, about 95% Indiana fans for this game, right?
I would say at least 80%, overwhelmingly majority Indiana fans.
Wow, that's incredible. So were you nervous before the first kick going, you know what?
I was nervous. I thought we were going to win, but I did not see a 28-point blowout coming. I thought like the spread was 7. If I were to bet it, I would have probably picked like us to win, Alabama to cover. I definitely thought it was going to be a close game. I didn't see a blowout coming.
Yeah, because there had to be that fear of I don't want our beautiful story, our emergence as a power on the college football landscape to be pantsed by Alabama and to have everyone on social media, television, YouTube, name it, laughing at you and pointing at you guys going, frauds. Right.
Basketball school. Yeah.
Right.
I really felt like this was the barometer of like the Big Ten SEC, like this particular matchup, like the Indiana team that went through undefeated and the Bama team that has a few losses, but they're in what many people think is the hardest conference. So I felt like this is a game people were circling in terms of like, has the Big Ten caught up to the SEC?
Well, you couldn't see because you were at the game, but I thought the turning point was when Alabama went for it on 4th and 1 from what their own 30. And you see Cignetti looking at it, like, and I think he's looking at Kalen DeBoer and he goes, I'm sorry, are you confusing me with Brian Kelly? I'm not a dope here. So, and he's also looking at his players like, okay, we've practiced this. You are not going to jump off sides here. And I thought the game completely turned after that. What'd you think?
It like a desperate move.
Yeah. Are you freezing up?
No, I'm still here. I'm just is Jeremy freezing up? I was gonna jump in. I'm trying to find the perfect video clip of it, but the Cignetti stare on that fourth down was so good, Andy, was so apropos in the moment, was so badass that if it were a movie, you would probably go, okay, come on. You'd roll your eyes at that, wouldn't you? Like, that is something out of Any Given Sunday, that the cocky Google me coach on the biggest stage against the sport's biggest bad boy opponent, Alabama, was doing that on a fourth down, and then, of course, they stopped him. I mean, come on. It's cinematically perfect is what it is.
They called timeout, and then they did it again. And it was like, you know, okay.
Yeah.
And then when he said after the game, you know, that it would make a movie, and Reese Davis asked who would play him, that's Billy Bob Thornton. That's Billy Bob Thornton, except he wins.
Yeah.
In the
which one?
The, Friday Night Lights.
Friday Night Lights. Yeah. Hey coach, we're going to state. Hey coach, we're going to state. Yeah. Jeremy, please tell me you watch Friday Night Lights.
He loves that. Oh yeah.
I love Friday Night Lights, the show and the movie.
Show and the Big movie. Fan. Got them both. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
So this is what I also like about the Cignetti stare is just all the memes it has launched. Yeah. It has launched 1,000 memes, such as dad's looking at the thermostat whenever the in-laws are in town.
Yeah.
Just making sure nobody moves a degree or two.
Watching the waitress. I liked watching the waitress at an Italian restaurant to make sure she puts the right amount of Parmesan cheese on your pasta.
Yep, there's another one right there. Checking out the Chipotle worker as they put the chicken in your burrito to make sure it's not too little.
Yeah. You know, the one, and both of you will appreciate this, the one that I like that relates to me looking at the car the morning after Samantha took it out. Like, you know, okay, where did it go? What does it look like? Does it have any dings? You know?
Exactly. All right, so there's a couple things about Cignetti that he said that I want to get into. And the first is, Andy, he was very explicit saying, I don't believe in wasting anyone's time. And so when our coaches get their work done, I want them out of the facility. And this then spawned a lot of people talking about how, you know, Joe Gibbs used to sleep in his office. And you were going back and forth with people online about whether or not that made Joe a good coach or not. Care to elaborate?
Yeah, I mean, look, it was a different time. You didn't have the cut-ups that you got on an iPad. The famous NFL films of Gibbs in the film room actually going through the film on a film projector.
Sure.
That's a different time, and it took more time. And it worked for him. It doesn't mean that that's the only way to do it. And one of the things Cignetti said, which I think is really important, he said, my assistants stay with me. And they've stayed with him, you know, through like Indiana University, Pennsylvania, Elon, James Madison, because they know they have a life, you know, and these other coaches, you know, and Larry Weissman used to talk about Gibbs' second go round, where he was still doing it the same way. And he said a lot of times they were sitting in the meeting room and they were talking about, oh, well, yeah, that play worked. But, you know, when Don Coryell ran it back in the 80s, it didn't work that way. And, you know, what Cignetti said is we don't waste any time. It's all business. And obviously it's working for him.
You got to like that, right, Jeremy?
Yeah. To my dad's point, his assistants have stayed with him throughout the whole time. And I think that's a big part of the success. And his defensive coordinator just signed a $4 million contract. So unless he gets a big coaching offer, I think he's going to stay around for a while.
$4 million for a coordinator in college, Andy, at Indiana.
Did you see
pinch me?
Too?
Am I living in the Matrix right now?
By winning that game, there's a clause in Cignetti's contract that he has to be one of the three highest paid coaches in the country, or he leaves with no buyout.
But he already is this year. So this year that doesn't really, with the extension they gave him, he already is a top three paid coach. But every year he makes the semifinal, they'd have to restructure it so that he's top three.
One of the biggest pop stars in music still today is Carrie Underwood. And she got her start. She was found on one of the first couple seasons of American Idol. Is it possible that this guy, Cignetti, is a similar dynamic to Carrie Underwood, that he was an exceptional coaching talent that had just been buried, just didn't quite get his shot?
What do you think, Jer? I don't know.
I think so. I think now you see like a lot of school, like Michigan hiring a 64-year-old. I think that's the Cignetti effect. I think teams wanted like the young coach, maybe the coordinator experience, like working under like the Dan Lanning came from working under Saban. Cignetti worked under Saban too, but he went to a smaller school. I think this kind of changes the mentality of like you can hire a coach from a smaller school.
Right.
And I don't think that was happening as much before Cignetti got hired.
Well, Whittingham was also Michigan's, what, fourth choice, basically? So, you know.
No, but they didn't expect what was going to happen to the coach today.
Yeah.
that.
Did you see, and did you see the people commenting going, yeah, Kyle Whittingham has not posted on social media in 11 years, and he is happily married.
I think
we're looking for them.
Yeah, exactly. All right, I want to play this Cignetti bite for you guys. This is him being asked about the Alabama mystique.
You know about the Bama mystique. How do you convince the players that you're playing this team, you're not playing all that tradition?
You probably know more about the mystique than they do. I mean, our guys just know what they see on tape.
You know about the Bama mystique. How do you convince the players that you're playing this team, you're not playing?
So that's the way he looks at things. And I would agree, Andy, that these younger players, they don't know or really give a shit about the stuff we as olds do.
Yeah, I also likened it to what Gene Hackman did in Hoosiers when he had Pee Wee put the tape measure at the basket.
Oh, right.
He goes up 10 feet, just 10 like feet. Our Jim and Hickory. And that's what it is. I mean, he's saying, yeah, these are football players. They're wearing Alabama uniforms, but we're watching them on tape, and we know we can kick their ass. I think that's what he was saying there.
Meanwhile, they're not taking it well down in Alabama, Jeremy. You sent me this clip from Paul Feinbaum's show, and I want to play it for you now. It's just great. They cannot cope with the notion that they are, you know, not still the most relevant program.
It ain't that we don't know the Nick Saban era is over. We know it's over. But we want to know why the hell in this new era that Indiana is beating our ass by 35 damn points. Somebody explain it to me.
Oh, God.
Somebody explain it to me. You don't know a damn thing, Ryan Clark or Cam Newton, about the Alabama fan base. Won't you stick to what you know? Because it ain't us, brothers. It ain't us. Will Sanders said today, to be a great football team, you got to be physical and mental. Well, Alabama's a soft-ass team, and we right now, we are a babbling idiot in need of shock treatment.
And the best thing is, there are thousands of guys like legend, as he is billed, on Feinbaum's show. Like, you can't swing a dead raccoon down there without hitting three of them.
Fat Feinbaum, though, he's getting killed on social media because he's saying, oh, well, have Indiana go through the SEC gauntlet and see what that's like. And SEC ain't the SEC anymore.
Okay.
He admitted he was wrong for the first time. There's a clip that came I saw yesterday from Get Up.
Really?
He finally is like, I was saying all year Indiana couldn't go through the gauntlet. It appears they could. And he's like, if Ole Miss can't do it, that'll be 3 years in a row for the Big Ten. It's the most self-aware I've ever seen him.
Yeah, that's a rare thing. That will not advance you in this business, right, Andy? All the guys that make the most money, Skip Bayless, Colin Cowherd, Mike Francesa, they never admit they were wrong. They never revisit a bad take.
The only one who will do that, and he's among the highest paid, is Stephen A. Stephen A. will admit he's wrong.
Really?
But yeah, I've seen him do that. But right. But when he thinks he's right, he thinks he's loudly right, and often he's wrong.
But when I admit I am wrong, I get really quiet and I go slow. Okay.
So the SEC, I don't know what their exact bowl record was. It wasn't good.
Not good.
And I had this back and forth with some guys about the old, your conference sucks, it's overrated, everyone's in the tank for them discussion. I joked about, hey, bowl season, it just means less, that SEC teams don't care as much. Should we use bowl records as any kind of metric, do you think?
No.
For anything?
Not anymore. No, because all the opt-outs, you got nobody playing anymore. I mean, I was surprised to see Diego Pavia playing. And then his tight end, I put something up on social media about this. His tight end Stowers.
Yeah,
I was watching the I think it was the was the New Year's Eve Bowl in El Paso, Sun Bowl, and he won some type of an award. And he talked about all the adversity that he faced. And I had to transfer twice. Well, he transferred out of Texas A&M because he was a quarterback and he wasn't going to play. Winds up in New Mexico State. There's Pavia. So he switches to tight end, and he had to transfer again when Pavia said, "Come on. We're all gone to Vanderbilt to make more money." That's really facing adversity.
Adversity. I feel like the Princess Bride clip of, I don't think you know what that word means, clip right there. Adversity.
Also, he opted out of the Sun Bowl. He didn't play in the Sun Bowl. So that's how in on he was with his team.
I will say, and this is where, Jeremy, I'm sure you're going to cape up for your Big Ten. I will say that I have long said that, yes, the SEC is the best conference in college football. However, they're not head and shoulders above everyone else. They're a click or two ahead. But I'm now starting to see the kind of the Ponzi scheme that is the way it works, because SEC Team A beats overrated SEC Team B in September, and that gets put up on the wall like a first place ribbon for some kid at a gymnastics meet, and it stays there the whole season. And then they keep playing each other with all these fake ribbons of, well, you know, you beat who and whatever. And at the end of the day, it's a bit of a scam, I would argue.
Yeah, I think Missouri is a good example of that. They lost their bowl game, and then a stat came out like they didn't beat a Power Four team with a winning record all year, yet they were ranked all year. Like, how does that work? And then that counts, to your point, that counts as a quality win for all these other teams in the SEC. So I definitely think there's something to that, and I also think there's something to the fact that ESPN kind of makes those preseason rankings or has a big say in them, and ESPN has a TV contract with the SEC. Yeah. So I definitely think there's something to what you're saying.
Andy, where do you fall on that whole thing?
I agree with that. And also, you know, it's hard to change perception. If the perception of the SEC, it's the Nick Saban conference for, what, 15 years. And he was great. And, you know, that carries over. But, you know, Nick Saban ain't walking through that door anymore. And his former assistants are in the Final Four.
It is my favorite conference. Just for the record, whether it's the best or not, it's my favorite. And when you're talking about, well, okay, if you're going to say, is it the best, are we taking the top three of ours and the top three of yours? Are we taking the bottom three versus the bottom? Are we taking the whole thing? Are we talking regular season? Are we talking playoffs? Are we talking bowl games? Are we talking about athletic budgets? Like, to me, all I want to see, and you can dig this information up, I want to see the football budget for every school in each conference. That kind of tells you which are the strongest in general conferences, even though sometimes they have down years. That's the only thing that matters. How much are you actually spending on football?
But the money, Northwestern hired Chip Kelly as offensive coordinator. I mean, come on.
And they're building this incredible new stadium. It's almost done.
So the old order doesn't work anymore.
Well,
it's all about the dollars.
Okay, but I would argue, and I don't know what you think about this, Jeremy, I would argue that in the future years, Northwestern is going to start punching at a higher weight class because they've made a clear investment in football.
So I would agree, and you can feel free to disagree on this, but I think if you look since NIL started, that's when the Big Ten teams started to kind of advance. They've won the last two national championships. It looks like they might win three. And I think there's something to be said. The SEC was paying players before it was legal. And now these schools like Michigan and Ohio State, they actually have richer alumni than Mississippi State and Ole Miss and LSU do. So now the SEC doesn't have that built-in advantage. I don't know if that's going to be coming to play when you look at, like, budget, but I definitely think there's something to be said for that.
Yeah. It's like, I'm Hoss McFadden. I've got 38 Cadillac dealers around the South. I'm going to pay the players. And meanwhile, Michigan is like, well, I have a hedge fund. So you want to play this game, Hoss, or not?
Right.
Exactly. And by the way, there are guys who are billionaires in the South that have hedge funds that went to SEC schools. So that is one thing altogether. So let me ask, are you going to continue this trail? Are you going to the Fiesta Bowl, the VRBO Fiesta Bowl? Get a VRBO.
No, he's going to the Peach.
Oh, that's
Peach.
Right. You guys go to the Peach.
So,
okay. Are you going to the Peach in Atlanta?
So I am going to the Peach Bowl. I am going. That will be, I know Zabe's not going to like, that will be where my journey ends. I will not go to the championship. Even if we make it, I don't think I can swing that.
Bullshit. I'll start a GoFundMe for Jeremy. Get you if the dream and the ride continues. It has to happen.
He's about to be a dad. Come on. Yeah. Let's be responsible here. Come on.
Andy, but to channel my inner George Allen, hey, you can be a dad your whole life. This is the championship. All right? Yeah. You'll have other kids, for God's sakes. Oh, that's awesome. The problem is, Jeremy, is that I love this story. I love the Cignetti angle so much. I want you to experience this thing in its full joy. I'm fully invested, but I'm also invested in the flip side of what would be the sweetest karma fuck you in the world, that Lane Kiffin would have to watch his old team stand under the confetti at the end of the road. That would be so good. It would prove to me that there is a sports god and that he is watching and he does love us and he will smote the wrongdoers in our life. I don't know if it's going to happen, though, because now Lane is making all of his assistants get to the office and grind away on portal guys instead of coaching Ole Miss. Dirty pool, mister. Dirty pool. Which also brings up the question of, so ESPN, Reese Davis, Kirk Herbstreit, how the fuck was he going to coach both teams during the playoffs, which you guys begged for? He's got his assistants doing eight-hour days hosting portal guys. Get out of here.
It's great. Well, the whole portal thing is nuts. Cignetti even said he had to take a couple hours away from practice to court new portal guys.
But he didn't whine about it. He didn't whine about it. He didn't get on a soapbox and lecture about it like some of the guys.
But here, Lanning is right. They got to get everything done January 1st. That's when the national championship should be played. They can back the hell. They're playing in mid-August now anyway. August 1st if you have to. But get this all done and then open the portal the next day. This is crazy the way this works. You got guys on the four teams that are opting out to go. You know, Indiana's got guys. Ole Miss has got guys. They're opting out.
Oregon.
I mean, those are guys that don't play. But I agree, it's a weird look. Yeah.
I believe Oregon, Jeremy, has a starter who declared he's out. That he dropped off.
I don't think he's a starter, but I think he's a guy that
he plays some. He's a DB. Yeah, he's like, I'm bouncing, going to the portal.
So, quick note, I don't know if you saw that press conference that you're talking about where Cignetti brought up the transfer portal, but him and Dan Lanning had some sort of bromance that he doesn't have with any other coach. He was very giggly, and you never really see him like that. So I think he might see some Lanning, like a young Kurt Cignetti as Dan Lanning, but all over Twitter, it's like, I've never seen Cignetti so happy, so giggly around any other coach or any other situation.
Yeah. All right, Jeremy. You are living the life. I'm so happy for you. Enjoy the Peach Bowl, and let's not talk about what's next until there is a next. A sure way to jinx things. A great way to hear God laugh is to announce your plans. So the only plan is you're going to Atlanta. If you need anything in Atlanta, I have many listeners throughout the country that I will guarantee you will email me going, oh, I can hook him up with this. I could take him here. I got a restaurant, okay? So just let me know if you need any help in Hotlanta.
Well, now that I got your number, I will let you know. Thanks for the offer.
All right. Atlantans, come to rally to welcome Jeremy and his hooligans. How many guys are going with you, by the way?
We'll have four for this one.
Nice.
All right. Same group?
Same group.
Oh, fabulous. That's great.
I would try to enlist your dad and say, hey, Andy, you want to go? But we would just jinx it. So we're going to stay very far clear of this.
So it wouldn't work for them. That's not going to work.
All right. Jeremy, you're free to log off. I got to deal with a couple other things with Andy and then call it a day. Thank you.
See you, buddy.
All right, buddy. See you guys. Go Hoosiers.
There you go. Go Hoosiers indeed. What a run. What a life. That is so cool. I just love the symmetry, Andy, of you went to the Super Bowl at the Rose Bowl for the Redskins. He went there to see them beat the shit out of Alabama.
That was so great. Yeah. Both were great experiences. Yeah.
All right. So we taped this on a Sunday morning before the Commanders' final game of the season. There is super nothing to care about or play for in this game, but that's the nature of week 18 or week 17 or week 16 as it used to be in the NFL. And they're going to probably expand the season beyond that. Do you think we're going to get multiple weeks of Drek if they expand it? Because in theory, more teams would be alive if there was a second week still to go.
Yeah, I mean, they don't really care. It's all television products, so they might even expand the playoffs. Who knows?
Expand the season and the playoffs?
Yeah, yeah.
So how would you do that, I mean, schedule-wise?
Because I don't know, but they don't care. They don't care. That's the point. And the fact that it's 17, it's going to be 18 games and probably 20, maybe in my lifetime. you know, why not? We've always had this at the end of the year, Dreck.
Yeah.
They've worked out a little differently this year, but they tried to fix it by having all these, you know, division games at the end of the year, and it worked a couple times. It worked yesterday with the Carolina-Tampa game, and it'll work tonight with Baltimore and Pittsburgh.
But otherwise, that's it. Yeah, the difficulty, if you do that, if you go to 18 weeks or 18 games, I think you have to have two byes, correct?
Yeah. Okay. You have to have two byes, but the problem with that is, well, they'll probably go back to playing on Labor Day weekend. They stopped doing that because of the television ratings. But there was one year that they actually tried this.
I remember the two-bye year. It was awful because you didn't know if your team was playing any given week because you have to track two byes. It's hard enough to track one bye.
Right, but this was 93, and they did start Labor Day weekend. And I remember the Redskins finished the season on New Year's Eve. They played on a Friday.
Yeah.
But, they're going to have to do two buys. And it's just, all they want is more product for television.
Right.
That's what this is.
Okay, but I'm just trying to sketch this out. So 18 games, two buys. That's a 20-week envelope. You have to start Labor Day at the latest. You're now pressing into deeper February for the Super Bowl, which means you could be playing a conference championship game outdoors in February, which would be brutal in Buffalo, New England, Green Bay, and other places. I mean, like literally dangerously brutal. It gets colder and colder as you get into Feb.
All right. And once again, since they don't care about the fans – what they will do, I think, is play them on neutral sites. They could do that too. Yeah.
Oh, well, neutral site conference championship games.
Again, and they don't care about
mini Super Bowls. So it'd be like three Super Bowls they'd look at it as, right?
Yeah, but, you know, they'll say, well, you know, in the NCAA basketball tournament, they always play on neutral sites. And look at why we've expanded college football, and they play, you know, the protection of the bowls. We'll see how long that lasts. But, those are neutral site games. The lead up to the championship game should all be on home fields, if we're fair, right?
I totally agree. Am I I lost my train of thought here. I was going to say, okay, and am I right in saying that in my lifetime, no league has ever shrunk, nor schedules have gotten smaller?
No. There have been a couple of I think there was a hockey team that folded once, like the Cleveland Barons may have.
In the early 70s, maybe?
Maybe so the 80s.
The only time it was even threatened was the pump fake of contraction by Bud Selig in MLB when the Expos were in Montreal and we were trying to get them in D.C., remember?
Well, that was never going to happen. The people we knew who were baseball people like Paul White said that was a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
You know, and then you had the owner of the Expos, Carl Pollad, running to the front of the line. Oh, contract me. I don't even know if that was real.
Has any season gotten shorter that you can think of?
No, I don't think so. Not that I remember. No. More product is what they want.
So that's just the world we're hurtling toward. And I guess you can scream about it and shake your fist at the sky, but it's probably not going to do much good, right?
Right. No, it just, you know, it's as long as television and streaming and that kind of thing matters, as long as they're making money off of that, then nothing's going to change.
Two media notes, and they're not encouraging or uplifting. One is that you noted the Oregon-Maryland college basketball game, Big Ten game, was covered again by nobody, that the game write-up was just a bot, basically, AI. And you were just gobsmacked that this could be that. This is a league game, you know, like the line in Big Lebowski. It's a league game, Smokey. Yeah. League game, no human body was there for the men even.
Right. Well, this is what I understand from the Post. Gene Wong, who we both know, was and maybe still is, covering college basketball. And he couldn't be in two places at once. So a couple weeks ago, he was at the Maryland-Virginia game when Georgetown was playing. Not a big Georgetown game necessarily, though it was a league game. And the coach, Ed Cooley, threw a water bottle into the stands and hit a kid.
Right.
The game story in the Washington Post had none of that because it was covered by AI. And then fast forward to this, okay, at least Gene Wong. You got a Maryland game on a Friday night. You can cover that. Nope. They pulled Gene to cover the Wizards. So the game was covered by AI. And my feeling is, okay, there's plenty of places that I could have gotten information about the game. I could have gone to ESPN or any of these sites and gotten information. But to me, I've always relied on the Washington Post for maybe a little bit more.
A little bit of depth. Right. A quote from Buzz Williams to talk about where they're at. Yeah.
Nothing except the scoring. And that was all that was available. And I'm still paying $170 a year for online access. I'm wondering if it's worth it anymore. I mean, there are other stories I'm interested in, but that's not right.
And in related newspaper news, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution announced they had printed their last physical paper on New Year's Eve. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution was always kind of like the fourth or fifth biggest wheel when it comes to newspapers in the country, and they produced a ton of great sports writers.
Yeah, I mean, they had Dave Kindred was there. Dave Kindred was also with the Washington Post. I look at what has happened to all newspapers and wonder, can anybody actually still print a paper? Does it make sense to do that anymore?
By print, do you mean print or create a digital newspaper?
Well, I mean,
or both?
I don't know what the business model is for a newspaper. Like the ads that you get in there, like, you know, used to be for Macy's and the supermarket ads that would get distributed in there. You know, did that make sense? I think once classified advertising went away, that I don't know how you can really make it anymore. And if you're just putting out digital website content, can you get that somewhere else? You know, a lot of these journalists are going out on their own, Substack, different places. And I just don't know if the business model is sustainable anymore.
Do you know if someone covers the Terps in depth, like you would if you were still writing for the Washington Post in 1985 with quotes and perspective and deep knowledge of the team and the program?
And there's a guy named Jeff Ehrman writes Terps 24/7, but you have to specifically subscribe to what he does.
Well, then pony up, Andy Pollin.
Okay, but I would have thought that when I used to be able to buy my Washington Post for a quarter and I could see John Feinstein's in-depth analysis of the Post along with Michael Wilbon's in-depth analysis of Georgetown along with great columnists like Dave Kindred and Tom Boswell and Tony Kornheiser and others, that I would get everything I wanted for a freaking quarter. Now I got to buy 100 different services to get what I want?
I hear you. I just wish that there was a way to reliably deliver the kind of information and content sports fans want without having to buy all that stuff. But I guess we're going to have to pay for all of our stuff now, nickel by nickel. Which, by the way, you can subscribe to this podcast and get it ad-free if you are a premium subscriber. A mere $4.58 a month if you buy a year at a time. You get 12 months for the price of 11. Otherwise, you can go month-to-month, cancel anytime. We've been $4.99 since we launched 7 years ago. We're still $4.99 today. I will never raise the price. Maybe some exclusions apply.
I guess the Athletic is doing that too.
Well, the Athletic gives their shit away. They just want the database. They want the database of names and active users, basically. And they do great shit. I bet the Athletic has somebody who covers Maryland.
Yeah, I guess they do. I don't know, but they took Nikki Javala, who was covering the Commanders for the Post. She's with them. David Aldridge is running the whole show, and they got some very good people over there. It's just, you know, my allegiance to the Washington Post, it's starting to wane.
All right, I'll end on this. You know, I love to bitch about the weather in the D.C. area because it is the worst weather of all the weather because we get everything from blizzards and ice storms to scorching, searing heat, derechos, thunderstorms, hurricanes at times, you name it. So we get the worst of everything. Some would say it's a wonderful variety of weather, and I complain because that's what I'm good at. Now, I got this from the Capital Weather Gang, a recap of 2025 for D.C. weather. I love these little factoids. You ready? Mm-hmm. Coolest year since 2014. It was a dry year, 35 inches of rain, the least since 2016. Most snow since 2016, which was 16 inches total. Only one record high, that was 85 degrees on March 31st. No record cold days. Our extreme was 99 on June 24th. And our low was 15 degrees on January 22nd. Am I the only one that gets off on weather stats? for the city you live in at the end of the year?
I live in a townhouse where I don't have to shovel snow except for my front steps, and I don't have to cut the lawn. I have an air-conditioned car. I have an air-conditioned house. I have a heated house, and I have a heated car. And I work in a heated office and an air-conditioned office. So these massive weather changes don't have much effect on me.
Sounds like you're an indoor cat, Andy, and that's okay.
Pretty much. I like to walk.
You like to bike. You like to be out. If you take up golf again, you could do that. If you wanted to play pickleball and rupture your Achilles, you could take up that.
No. I like to take walks in the early morning, and sometimes it's like 30 degrees. But if I wear a hat and gloves, I'm okay.
It's good.
It's fine.
All right. Andy, good to talk as always on a Monday. Happy New Year, my friend. As Larry David said, I've probably violated his – he says you only get 3 days to say Happy New Year, Larry David, and curb your enthusiasm. So a belated Happy New Year. First, I've talked to you in the new year, so let's make 2026 great. Thank you, my friend.
All right, Dave. Take care.
Andy Pollin and his son, Jeremy, and that will wrap today's Zabecast. Thank you so much for listening and being a part of it, and we will see you next time. We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh no. With MyBookie and its cash out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag.